2 minutes later, the corrugated steel door clanked noisily up. Jung drove a Volkswagen Golf out of the building. The door came clanking quickly down again, to rise 2 minutes later to permit the exit of a Jeep Grand Cherokee with Bradley driving. When the corrugated steel door had crashed noisily down again, one of the cops who had helped with the luggage raised his hand toward the ramp. "Please," he said in English. They started to follow him up the ramp. Max ran past him without difficulty. The others had a little trouble. The ramp was quite steep, not very wide, and had 6-inch-wide anti-wheel slip bumps running across it. At the next level, they found themselves in an area much like the level they had just left. Vehicles of all descriptions were parked tightly together against the walls. Max was standing in the middle, looking at a brown, uniformed Gendarmeria sergeant sitting on a folding chair with an Uzi in his lap. The gendarme sat in front of a steel door in an interior concrete block wall. As the man led them across the open area toward the door, the gendarme, eyeing Max warily, got quickly out of his chair and had the door open by the time the man got to it. The man went inside, and there was again the flicker of fluorescent lights coming on. "Please," he said once more, as he waved them inside. Max trotted in first. The room was dominated by an old desk, once grand and elegant, before which sat a simple, sturdy, rather battered oak conference table. There were 8 chairs at the table. The wall behind the desk was covered with maps of Argentina in various scales, including an enormous one of Buenos Aires province. Along both walls were tables holding computers, facsimile machines, telephones, a coffee maker, and some sort of communications radios. All of it looked old. "Please," the man said again, this time an invitation for everyone to sit down. "That will be all, thank you," Muntz said to the man. "Si, mi coronel," the man said, and left the room, closing the door behind him. Max lay down with his head between his paws and looked at the closed door.
"Okay, Alfredo," Castillo said. "What's going on? Starting with, where are we?"
"We have a law of confiscation in Argentina, Carl," Muntz said. "This building was being used as a warehouse for cocaine and marijuana. It was seized, and so were the vehicles you saw. Comandante Leon Duffy of the Gendarmería Nacional now uses it, unofficially, as an office and base of operations."
"He's the guy who the DEA guy was on his way to see when he was snatched?" Deschamp asked. Muntz nodded. "So what are we doing here?" Deschamp went on. "And who are all the guys with guns?"
"Comandante Duffy thought there was a good chance that you would be at some risk at the airport."
"How did he know we would be at the airport?" Taurine asked.
"He was with us at the house when you radioed saying you were going to Ezeiza instead of Jorge Newbery," Darby offered.
"You had this guy in Nuestra Pequeña Casa?" Castillo snapped at Alex Darby. "That's supposed to be our safe house."
"A lot of things have happened, Charlie," Darby replied.
"Obviously," Castillo said, thickly sarcastic.
"Easy, Ace," Deschamp said, then looked at Darby. "Like what, Alex? What has happened?"
"The bottom line is that Chief Inspector Jose Ordóñez of the Interior Police Division of the Uruguayan Policía Nacional is back in the game."
"Jesus Christ!" Castillo exploded. "How the hell—"
"Let him finish, Ace," Deschamp said reasonably.
Castillo glowered at him, but said nothing.
"If I may,"
Alfredo Muntz began, and when Castillo motioned impatiently for him to go on, Muntz picked up the explanation.
"The day I came back here, I called Jose Ordóñez for several reasons. One, to thank him for what he had done for us, and to tell him that I was back. And frankly, the primary reason I called was to ask him how well he knew Duffy. I knew we had to deal with Duffy, and I knew Duffy only casually. And I knew Duffy would know that I had been retired from CIDE
and was afraid that he wouldn't want to have anything to do with me.
And? Castillo said.
José told me that Duffy had come to Uruguay to see him, and that as a result of the interesting conversation he'd had with him, he had called Bob Howell and asked him how Duffy could get in touch with me, and more important, with you.
Robert Howell, the cultural attaché of the U.S. Embassy in Montevideo, was in fact the CIA station chief.
And what did Howell tell him? Castillo asked carefully.
The truth, or what he thought was the truth, that both you and I were in the United States, but that he would relay the message.
And what did Howell do?
He got on the next plane to Buenos Aires and came to see me, Darby said. So I took him out to Nuestra Pequeña Casa to see Alfredo, to see if he had any idea what this was all about.
Did you?
Castillo asked.
Muntz shook his head.
I don't think we were in the house 30 minutes, Darby said, when Duffy showed up at the front door.
The front door?
Or at the gate? Castillo asked.
The front door, Darby said. Obviously, he had people on me or Howell, more likely both, and they followed us from the embassy. And no country club security guard is going to tell a comandante of the Gendarmeria he can't come in.
What did he want? Castillo asked.
To talk to me, Muntz said, but especially to you.
What about?
I wanted to show you some photographs, Colonel,
a voice behind Castillo said. It sounded not only American, but as if the speaker were a native of Brooklyn.
Castillo turned to see a tall, muscular, very fair-skinned man with a full head of curly red hair. He was in the process of taking off his suit jacket, under which he carried in a shoulder holster what looked like a full-frame Model 1911 A1 Colt 45 semi-automatic pistol. Max was now on his feet, his head cocked to one side, looking at the newcomer.
So you're Liam Duffy, Castillo thought. And how long have you been outside listening to this conversation, Señor Duffy?
Duffy walked around to behind the ornate desk. He hung his jacket on the back of his chair, sat down, and then announced,
I'm Comandante Duffy of the Gendarmeria Nacional.
He really does sound like he's from Brooklyn. Where the hell did that come from?
How do you do, Comandante? Castillo said. Am I to thank you for the protection we've had since we walked into the terminal at Ezeiza?
Alfredo, who I recently learned is a very dear friend of a very dear friend of mine in Uruguay, José Ordóñez, which makes him a very dear friend of mine, thinks we might work together, Colonel. With that in mind, it was in the interest of the Gendarmeria to guard you and your men against a threat I don't think you knew existed.
What kind of a threat?
Possibly being shot, or perhaps being strangled.
Now, who would want to do something like that to innocent tourists who came to your beautiful country to fly fish its rivers of trophy trout?
The same people who did this, Colonel, Duffy said.
He tossed a large manila envelope. Very skillfully, it landed right where Castillo was sitting, across his desk.
Castillo took from the envelope a thick sheath of color prints. They had been printed on ordinary paper, but the quality told him they had been taken with a high-quality digital camera. He took a quick look at the first one, then passed it to Deschamps and signaled that he was to pass it to Taurine and the others when he had seen it. It showed a bullet-riddled body of a man in a brown, military-type uniform. He was lying on his back, eyes open, in a dark pool of blood, on what was probably the gravel shoulder of a macadam country road. There were, in all, 8 photographs of the body. Several fairly close photographs of the head and torso showed the head was distorted. It had been shot several times at close range, including, Castillo judged, once in the mouth. There were more signs of entrance wounds in the body than Castillo could conveniently count.
which strongly suggested the use of a submachine gun with what looked like an entirely unnecessary coup de grace shot in the mouth. Next came as many photographs of a second gendarme. He had died of strangulation. A blue metal garrote had been so tightly drawn against his throat that it had cut into the flesh. He had lost a substantial quantity of blood before he had died. Then there were glossy photographs of two gendarmes sitting in a chair. Both had their wrists handcuffed and showed signs of having been beaten.